You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Trista Gerton, and we're going to talk about how and why she recently made a pretty dramatic career shift. I get to talk to a lot of people about shifting careers. It's a popular conversation on the show. For me, it's always a fun conversation. So far, each and every story is completely different and really interesting. This one is no exception. Before we get started, I have a question for you to think about, which is, how many countries have you been to so far in your life? And did you travel for work or just for fun and for pleasure? So you think about that. And if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's do it. Trista Gerton, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you so much. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here.
I'm happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am ready. Let's go.
I love it. I begin almost every interview by asking people what part of the world they're in. So do you mind sharing with us where you're talking to me today from?
So right now I'm close to Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada.
Nice.
Yes.
Very nice. I am just directly down the East Coast from you. You wouldn't even have to exit from 95 and all the way down to Miami, Florida. All right. So I love to learn about people's personal backgrounds before they dive in. So tell us a little bit about your life outside of work, outside of work history, but just like maybe about a hobby you have or something, a name of a pet, whatever, something a little bit about you just as a person to connect.
Right. Well, gosh, that's funny because I would have started with my work, right? But no, it's, you know, I am an avid traveler. And I sort of combine that with my professional life. But so I've traveled to 78 countries now. So I love to travel, love to go as many places as I possibly can. And I've picked up several pets along the way. I have Molly from Iraq. She's living with my dad right now. And they have a cat from Lebanon. And then we have a cat and a dog here, both from Lebanon as well. So we have Bella and Toby. And yeah, I sort of travel and pick up pets. Those are my two hobbies.
All right. I get it. All right. That is very cool. And I think of bringing pets home from abroad and traveling with them is kind of a cumbersome process. So kudos to you for getting that done.
Well, you know, I actually have to thank the Canadian government because the restriction, like the procedure is actually very straightforward.
Okay.
So if you're in Canada and you want to adopt a pet from abroad, we just need the rabies vaccination.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Yeah. So it's very straightforward. It's not expensive. Yeah.
I'm not sure as far as I've never done it. I'm not sure as far as the same, but I do have some people, friends who have done. Yeah. I have some friends who've done trans, they've international moves with pets, dogs and things.
Right.
And there's been quarantine and inspections and it's taken a long time. And,
right.
You know, we love our pets. So we got to do it. All right. So we're going to get to the topic of the day.
Yes.
Not talk about pets all day long, but the topic you proposed was retiring from a career of humanitarian aid work and shifting to be a full-time entrepreneur. Would you like to talk about that today?
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Let's
all right.
Do it.
So we're recording this in February 2025. It's not going to go, people won't hear it for a while, but aid work is like currently in the news more than I feel like it has been in the past. And I just feel like I need to just say that I didn't suddenly become a political news show with this topic. It just happens to be your story. How long ago did you make this shift? How long ago did you decide that you were stepping away from the humanitarian work that you were doing?
Just a couple of months ago. I came back to Canada in October, mid-October.
Okay. It's a pretty new shift.
It still feels, pretty new. Like I'm still sort of decompressing and making that change. But yeah.
All right. I love it. How long had you been working in humanitarian aid work?
Gosh, you know, it's 20 plus years. I did an internship back in 1998 in Guatemala and Honduras, and that was my first international posting. And then I did my master's in international development in 2000. And then I guess my first sort of real post was in 2003. So,
Okay,
yeah,
long
just
time.
over 20 years. Yeah.
So I want to ask you a couple questions about the humanitarian job, because it's not every day that I talk to somebody who has a job like that, and I'm super curious. Is that all
No.
right?
Yeah, please.
All right. So you actually answered part of this because you mentioned your master's, but what did you study and how long ago was it that you decided this was what you wanted to do? Because there's not a part of my life where I ever was like, oh, that's a job that's open to me.
Course, yeah. I guess probably when it started was when I probably think I was maybe 13 or 14. My mom took me to New York City for the weekend.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that was my first sort of big trip. And so it sort of opened my eyes, and I thought at that point that I wanted to move to New York, but it's sort of like I think that was the impetus. Like, I didn't want to be in Canada in St. Catharines, like, sort of here. I knew I sort of wanted to go, right?
Wanted to see the world.
Yes. And then my dad took me for March break when I was 16 to Paris.
Okay.
And that sealed the deal. I was like, okay, definitely. Like, this is, I have to get out there.
Okay.
And somewhere along the way, like, I think between New York and Paris, I was sort of like, I wanted to work for the UN.
When you said you went to New York, that's where I thought
Yes.
you were going to go,
Exactly.
because
Yeah.
that's
So
okay.
that's,
So.
yeah. So that sort of was all percolating. And I guess, I wanted to travel. I wanted to do something like I knew I didn't want to just push paper. I knew I wanted to get out there and, do something that made a contribution. If I had to work every day, I sort of wanted to, do something interesting and that would help. And then I guess I did my bachelor's in political studies.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I just sort of went from there. Like when I graduated from with my bachelor's, I went to Korea and taught English for a year, came back, and then did that internship in Guatemala and Honduras for a year. Then I did an internship. There was a peacekeeping center out in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
Did my master's in international development and then just
And
started.
just went.
Never stopped. Yeah.
So your studies, you're interested in politics and you're interested in government and you wanted to do good work. And then one job, it sounds like I guess we call them postings or the
Exactly.
jobs,
Yeah. Yeah.
went from one to the other with a variety of agencies or all sort of connected.
It was a variety. Yeah, I did some work with the UN for a couple of years, and then I moved around. I did work with a French organization, a British organization, and an Italian organization, an NGO, and then most recently with a Norwegian organization. So, yeah.
Wow, that is really, really interesting. Okay, so you started doing these things, but did you ever have, when you were younger, did you ever have any other different sort of career aspirations? Did you want to be maybe a diplomat, or sometimes people want to be a spy? Like, were there
I don't remember. I just knew I wanted to do something internationally, and I
Okay.
sort of was trying to figure out what that would look like how I would get in. Like, I think I was probably when I look back at it now, I just wasn't sure like how to break in and what exactly that would look like.
Okay.
I sort of like when I did my master's, I did some work on the reintegration of female soldiers, and I actually did my thesis on Mozambique and went there and did some research. And then I was at the peacekeeping center, so I sort of was interested in that, but then I don't know, these postings, I was applying for things. I was so enamored with being able to travel to all these different countries. I landed up in Sri Lanka and Angola. I went to Kosovo, and then I sort of went to the Middle East for many years. I was in Iraq and Yemen and Lebanon for the majority of those years. So,
So it
yeah.
sounds like if I was to sort of spin this all together, you were creating, instead of picking a job and a skill set that you wanted to do, you were motivated by an experience and a lifestyle that you wanted to experience.
I was really addicted to, yes, like the change
Okay.
and the countries. And then I sort of fell into like a management position. So I was, manager, leader, country director at different points, and I really enjoyed that work as well, leading a large team responsible for the implementation of the activities. The day-to-day work in that role was always different. So I wasn't in the front lines necessarily, but I was, leading the teams that were doing that work. And what I really enjoyed was throughout the day, my work was always different. I could be looking at budgets, I could be writing proposals, I could be, involved in HR, logistics, whatever it was, and then the actual programs and whatnot, meeting other organizations, coordination and whatnot. So I sort of, transitioned into not having a specialty because, a lot of people go into, they become education specialists or water and sanitation or demining or whatever it is. And I got bored. Like I didn't want to specialize in one of those because then all you do all day, every day is like,
It's that specialty, right?
right?
Which, if you are a person who's motivated by a task, which you really love the task or you love that portion of the job, that is the way you want to do it. Like, for example, a surgeon, right? A surgeon wants to be a surgeon. They're motivated by doing the task, and you are motivated, which I think that's a really interesting way to look at how you ended up there. So you did, we're talking about some things you enjoyed about the job. You did this work for a really, really long time. So that means there were lots of things that you enjoyed. You enjoyed the travel. You enjoyed, what else did you enjoy?
Meeting the people, learning about all the different cultures. I feel very fortunate. I met, and the one thing that really struck me along the way was, the women that I was meeting
Okay.
and their incredible stories and the way they were living their lives and how incredibly talented and interesting they were. I spent a year and a half almost in Yemen. And we had actually a large number of female staff at that time, and they were incredible. They were so hardworking. They were so talented. They were so smart. I was just so impressed and so inspired by them. And so that's definitely been a huge part of the journey, the meeting all these people around the world.
Meeting all the people. And then, what were the things on the flip side, given the fact that you have made the choice to step away from this? I'm guessing there were some things that were not your very favorite things. And so, what were some of the things that began to be challenging or frustrating or generate feelings that were not lovey-dovey about this long career that you had in humanitarian aid work?
Well, I think one of the things I especially struggled with at the beginning and for a long time was not having a conventional sort of normal life.
Okay.
It's funny, that's what sort of drove me. But then I think, we're so conditioned and all the messaging and everything that we've absorbed,
We
right?
are.
Right? So it's sort of like I was like, should I be doing that? Like, should I be getting married and having kids and having buying the house? Because at a certain point, that's what all my friends were doing. And I was and I actually came home to Toronto for a year and a half in there and worked for a Canadian organization. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I was like, I tried that and I was like, yeah, no, I'm gonna keep going. So that's when I went to Iraq. But that stayed with me for a really long time. And I had to work through that. And then, of course, living in some of these places, the security situation was not great. And I
Well,
don't
I did when you said you were in Yemen. I was thinking to myself, Yemen has never been on my top tourism places to go list.
Not Iraq or Lebanon or any of those places.
Actually have a very close friend who grew up in Lebanon and is trying to plan going home. And this has been quite a long process for him to, he's planning a trip to visit relatives he hasn't seen in a long time, but it's not necessarily the easiest place to get to or be in.
So that definitely took a toll on me, physically and emotionally and mentally. And, particularly being in Lebanon last year and up until October, I'm still, I was thinking about this yesterday. Like, I still am decompressing and just realizing how stressed I was. And of course, it makes sense. I mean, that situation was very difficult. And I was in the south. I was close to the border with Israel, and so privy to, all listening to some of the shelling and the bombing. And they do these mock raids.
Okay.
So the jets will fly over and go to Mach 1. So you have this sonic boom, but you don't know, necessarily that
They
it's a
don't
sonic
announce you.
boom, right?
they
So
don't send you a schedule of when they're going to do this.
it's very, very loud. I mean, it's a form of psychological warfare. So, and sometimes the windows rattle. And anyway, so all that to
So yeah,
say,
so you're talking about living through existing 24 hours a day in a location that is really adjacent to an active war
stable.
zone. And the nonstop pervasive thoughts that would be about your own personal
My
safety.
own personal safety. And
Yeah.
then, of course, my team was all Lebanese. So
Oh.
I had a staff of 80 people. And you can imagine, I mean, they were so stressed and so upset and so worried. I mean, Lebanon had been so stressed and so worried since 2019 when the economic crisis started.
Sure.
So, and they're all still actually very traumatized from the war from in 2006, where Israel had bombed for a month, and particularly in the south. So there's a lot of trauma there.
Yes. And
So
this
you're
is
living in
so
Israel.
in when those of us who are not living in a war zone who like do trauma education and things. Sometimes people will try and make it kind of cute, and they'll talk about small T trauma versus big T trauma. And what you're talking about is the classic definition from the beginning of time of how we study trauma, big T trauma. This is, am I going to die today?
Right.
And yeah.
And it's also a difficult situation for me because I know they would like people like I would get out, right? I left. I'm done.
Yeah.
But this is their life. Like
People
this
live
is,
there. This is their
right? Like
country.
they a lot of people didn't have the option to leave the country if they needed to.
Most people probably don't. And
Most
that's
people.
in most
Exactly.
countries.
Right.
Absolutely. So that's
So
all right.
yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. So I have a funny story about the airplanes and the noises, not related to Lebanon or war.
Okay.
So I live in South Florida and we have an air and sea show on the beach in the summer, April, May. And many, many years ago, I knew somebody who moved from Central Florida to a beachfront condo on like the 25th or 26th floor. They were moving in, and when you move, it's all encompassing. You're not aware of necessarily what's happening around you. So they're moving in on air and space weekend, but they don't know it, right? They don't realize this because they're just focused on their boxes. So
Right.
they're in this apartment overlooking the ocean, enjoying things, and they wake up and it's like practice. The show is not on yet, but the fighter jets start flying by like right in front of their window with the noise and it's rattling all the windows. And they didn't know
Yes.
the show was going on. And they're like, what is happening? What is happening? Why are they
Imagine,
shouting?
yeah.
Absolutely. They said it was absolutely terrifying, really, really loud.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine.
And so that's my other story from that. So we went, and they told us that story, like out at dinner, and we laughed. We had big belly laughs about that. All right. So anyway, that would be a really tough situation, even if we have not experienced anything like that. I think that people can imagine. And so, was this stress the leading factor that you were like, you know what, I need to take a break. I need to go home and shift something else at the moment? Or was it just generally you were ready to change careers?
Well, so what happened was I had found life coaching back in 2017, 2019, sort of at that time. At that point, I was in Lebanon still. I was in a long distance relationship and just sort of frustrated and, frustrated with the relationship, sort of stressed about that and a few other things, and found life coaching and found that it was really helpful I love the tools that I learned. I love the impact that it had on me and the changes that I was able to subsequently implement. And then when COVID hit, I found that I had some extra time on my hands.
Sure.
So I took a life coach certification.
Me too, actually. I
Did
did that
you?
during I during lockdown. I did,
Did,
absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
it was like a whole thing. It's like, what am I gonna do?
Yes,
I've done all of the
right?
virtual races I can do. I did not learn how to make bread until way after COVID. So I was like, let's sign up for some stuff.
Right. And that sort of dovetailed nicely because I was sort of thinking, okay, I think in the back of all humanitarian aid workers' minds is, you know, we're not going to be doing this when we're 65, right? Like, we're not going to be.
Okay.
I didn't want to live in Afghanistan when I was 60. I sort of thought I needed some point to make a transition, but I didn't know what that would be.
Okay.
And then I saw this life coach certification and I thought, you know, that might be sort of interesting. Like, you know. And then, of course, with COVID, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to take the certification. It'll be interesting for me. It'll be useful as a manager. And let's just see what happens. And I started the certification and I just loved it. And I was like, I have to do this. And what happened was I started my business on the side. So I
Okay.
was coaching in the evenings and the weekends. So my plan was always to transition at some point.
Okay.
Right. And then after 8 years in Lebanon and the situation that, you know, with everything that was going on, it's like, okay, it's
All
time.
right, this is the time. So that is what, so I have a joke. I have a joke about women taking certifications, midlife women taking certifications.
Yes.
And I am the origin story of this joke and all of my friends. But my joke is that whatever your hobby is at like at, or your interest at like 35, you will take a certification course in that. It doesn't matter if it's yoga training
Yes.
or spinning training or life. For me, it was like swimming, running, triathlon, and then life coaching. It's like you're doing a thing, you like it. And if they feed you that offer enough times, you're like, oh yeah, let's do that. That does sound like fun. I am curious about this.
Sure.
Let's do
Yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And when you're, and I think it's, I just think it's hilarious that it is what we all do.
Yep.
So I gotta say that I do talk to a lot of people about career shifts, which I love to talk to them about. This is not the this. I love it. I recently talked to a person who went from being a symphony musician to an aviation instructor.
Wow.
I don't know if there's a career shift out there that would shock me. But when you said humanitarian aid to life coach, I was like, oh, that's not one you hear every day. It just isn't. It just isn't. Like I would have thought, humanitarian worker to local volunteer organizer, maybe,
Right.
right? Something like
Yeah.
that. So
Yeah.
this is it. But I was going to ask you if you had considered other things, but you did not. This was something you were working on and you fell in love with it and you said, I'm going to build this on the side and then offer it when I come home.
Exactly. I mean, I've had clients over the past 4 years. So I've been doing this, but you know, it's been a couple of clients at a time. I started my podcast a couple of years ago. But yeah, I mean, it was always sort of just, I don't want to say doing the minimum, but I mean, it was challenging to do that over the past couple of years. So
No, absolutely. Well, you had a full-time job. You were
yeah.
doing other things. And so it's and it wasn't what, it wasn't all lockdown. Like we did have more time in lockdown because
Right.
we changed our schedules.
Exactly.
And so that went there. All right, so let's do this then. So because in a minute we're going to do the final questions, but I do want you to tell people specifically what you do. We know you're a life coach,
Great.
but who do you help? And tell us how people can find you and talk to us about your podcast.
Okay. So I'm working with midlife women who are feeling stuck. And basically, their life no longer fits them. And they want to make a change. You know, they've had some of all the success and they've raised the kids and done all the things. And maybe they're ready to switch careers or, you know, change jobs. So I've coached a lot of women who have lost their jobs and
Sure.
now for that next thing. Or, a relationship has ended, the kids have left home, whatever it is, it's sort of like this big transition and they're ready for the next thing, right? Because in midlife, we still have a lot of life left to live.
Yes.
And so I work with these women to develop their mindset, right? We do a lot of mindset work. We build emotional resilience. We build that relationship with ourselves. And then we look at, what we're going to do in the future and really, decide what it is we want. I think people go through lives, not knowing exactly what they want and who they want to be. And so it's taking that time to really distill that down and get clear and start to build it. And that's, I teach the tools and skills that we need to do that, to create the life that we want.
Very cool. So what's in, tell us the name of your podcast and where and your website.
So the podcast is The Staring Adventure, and you can
Okay.
find that at thestaringadventure.com. I don't do a lot of guest interviews. Most of the time it is me, but I cover all things mindset and emotional resilience and setting goals and motivation and whatnot. But I've started to have a few guests lately, so I'm getting back into that, which is really fun, and just interviewing all the amazing women.
Yeah.
And my website is tristagurton.com. So it's TristaGurtin.com. And you can find
Good.
all the information about the podcast and the work that I do. I have a 3-month program called Unstuck, and that's where we do all the work to get you unstuck for good.
Super fun. So we mentioned, you mentioned that we were conditioned for certain things earlier. And it's interesting because, so when we say that, right, we're saying that you pick up this messaging from all around you without paying any attention as a young person, as a young woman. It's really, it's happening all the time, right? And what I think that's so interesting about that, with that you mentioned that, when we're midlife, we have a lot of living left to do. Which is very, very happy news for most people. But it's so funny when you talk about the conditioning, it's very specific that it ends, the conditioning ends with marriage and kids, right? Which only half the people on the planet do. So it only applies to half the people. So it's a big, half the people are walking around saying, well, I didn't do that part. Like, this is a, what do I do? And then the thing is, there's no next step. We do a terrible job of getting people ready for anything that happens after that, which is, so much of everything, right? Raising the kids, having the relationship, all of the stuff, and then the changing. And so it's no surprise that people are walking around thinking, well, I don't think this was in the instruction manual. Like, this was not part of the Disney movie that I watched about, it was like, well, happily ever after. So, okay, that's the end of that.
That's true. That's
Yeah.
true. And I, what, one of the most important things I teach my clients is that, what you've done in the past does not predict or dictate what you do in the future. And what we want to look at is your capacity and possibility. And
Right.
that we're going to write this all, it's all new, right?
Yeah.
And anything is possible. Let's take the time and figure out what that is, and then I can teach you how to go about and get it. And have a lot of fun along the way.
Very good. All right. So now I'm going to ask you three questions. We're going to wrap this up. These are the rapid fire questions. They're just for fun, not related to anything that we've talked about before. What is something that you don't know how to do now, or that you an experience, or you don't know how to do well, or an experience that you haven't had yet, that you haven't tried, but that you would really like to learn or do or try while you're still alive in this lifetime?
That's a good question. I'd really like to go skydiving.
Oh, really? Okay, very good.
Yes,
Yeah.
I have done that, and I thought that's definitely on my list of things to do.
Very good. Well, people, there's lots of people out there that will happily sell you a ticket to do that. You just have
Okay.
to buy, you just have to sign up. I'm pretty sure they take credit cards.
Yes,
Pick a
I know.
warm
I need
day.
yes.
Pick a warm day.
I always wanted to do it in Dubai because you can get that
Oh, the over
photo
the palm. Yeah.
of
Yeah.
I thought that, but yeah,
It
maybe
is
this
a
summer I'll do
dramatic
it. Yeah.
video. I have a friend that
Yes,
did that
right?
and sent me the video, and I replied back. I was like, I'm so happy you sent this to me because now I never need to do this. All right. So, what is something simple and maybe even inexpensive for you that gives you yourself a feeling of comfort and even luxury?
I have a cashmere scarf that I bought in Nepal,
Okay.
and I've been wearing it all winter.
And that feels luxurious for you.
It does, yes.
Very
It
nice.
this it's just this warmth around my neck, and it's just like a little hug, and it's just like that's it.
So I live in the Amos tropics, and this is not something I deal with, but I think that staying warm for somebody in Canada is a very, very luxurious feeling. I totally do that. All right, so if I was a fly on the wall in your house on a rainy Sunday, Saturday morning or Sunday morning, when you have no requirements, no commitments, no obligations to anybody else, just you have a wide open schedule, what would you probably be doing?
I would probably be lying on the couch reading and
Okay.
journaling. Yeah.
Reading and journaling, just
Yeah,
relaxing and
that's my
reading and
favorite. Yeah,
journaling.
weekends when I have the time just to lie about and read.
Very nice. What do you like to read? Do you read real books or ebooks?
Well, mostly ebooks, although since I've been back, I've been going to the library here to pick up, the real books. But, traveling as much as I have and living abroad,
Yeah.
I've been using my iPad and the Kindle app, because that when I first started out, that was always like the big stressful thing. How many books can I bring with me? How much do they weigh? How big are they?
Sure.
Putting them in my luggage. And then, what happens when I run out and I've read them, and where do I get more books? So I have to tell you that the iPad saved my life. And
Oh, I'm a huge fan of the e-reader. What I especially like about the e-reader is if you finish a book in the middle of the night, it's like, straight to the store, new book. Instant gratification. Thank you very much. All right,
Yes.
that's it. Trista, thank you for being a wonderful guest on the show today.
But thank you, Amy. It was my pleasure. I had a great time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.